Hello, Chatterbox listeners. Welcome once again to another digest of Chris Skinner on High Ash Farm. Norfolk farmer and nature lover extraordinaire. Coming up, signs of autumn already. Swans going tail up in the mud and picking the Victoria plums for this mast season. Come with us now as we head off to Caister St Edmund near Norwich and visit Farmer Chris.
Fabulous late August morning, just after 9 o'clock, and there's still strength in the sun. It's shining away, lots of blue sky, and what a pleasure it is to be out in the Norfolk countryside once again to find Chris Skinner, our Norfolk farmer and nature lover, on the beach this morning. Here we are, and there's quite a big beach here at your lake, isn't there?
Matthew, good morning to you. Very warm welcome to High Ash Farm. We're standing beside our, what we call a lake. It's either a really, really large pond or a very small lake. I haven't decided which yet, but it's over 1,000 metres of square water surface.
It could be a pake or a lond.
Whichever you like, I don't mind. But it's, the water level is good 2 feet beneath where it should be, and the water's quite shallow, and we've just got a succession of new arrivals at the farm, because water features, when you establish them, this was dug in 2006, so it's coming up for 20 years old. It's well established now, and it's about the fastest feature that you can put in, either in garden scale or landscape scale like this one, to attract wildlife. And that is exactly what it's done. Out on the farm, I sort of look after the farmland birds and the mammals out there and provide what they need, and water features attract a completely different set of species. And we're spoilt this morning. In past weeks, I've put a little false fishing rod on the far side of the lake there, and had a kingfisher there, and we managed to capture that hovering beside the lake and then fishing. It's absolutely boiling with fish. They're mainly rudd, a few brown trout in here, and they've all brought themselves here. No stocking has been done, and all the vegetation around the perimeter, there's some small willow over there, sort of all the water plants that you can imagine.
You have flag iris here.
Yes, there is. The flag, the yellow flag, all the way all round, is establishing itself quite well and forming really large clumps. Large willow herb there, also called codlins and cream. Some of them have got lovely names. And right in the corner where we are, there's quite an unusual plant. It's just finished flowering. It's where Rat the dog is. He's sniffing around it at the moment. It's called gypsy wort. And it used to be boiled up, and it would yield a kind of jet black dye from the sort of boiled solution. And gypsies used to get that black dye and blacken their faces and then pretend they were from Africa and sort of perform magic tricks, and hence it sort of got the nickname of gypsy wort. It's really unusual.
I don't think that would be acceptable these days, would it?
No, that's right. It's very out of order. But swimming towards us is the world's second heaviest flying bird. It's only outstripped by the African Cory bustard, who averages about another kilo and a half on top of this bird. This is a young male moot swan, and he's swimming around very serenely at the moment, only about 20 feet from us, and he's just finishing his molt. So he's landed here. During the week, there were four of them here. The others have actually gone, and all around the perimeter of the lake, it looks as though there's been some serious fighting going on. You can see there's a line of feathers, a lot of the sort of under feathers, we call them, which is the down underneath the main flight feathers, and that helps keep the birds warm during the winter. And this is the period of the year when most of the birds here actually go into molt, and we got some swallows flying around as that one just dipped down and took a beak full of water. Lovely sight. They're circling round and then coming back into the wind and taking a quick dip of the water. Anyway, the swan has been here, and I've had a camera here for 2 or 3 weeks now, and I've been fascinated since this mute swan arrived to just watch its behaviour, what it does. Spends a great deal of time preening, pulling out the old feathers and allowing the new ones to grow. It's quite a heavy bird. I can tell it's a male because it's got a very small knob just at the top of its beak, just forming. When you get into the breeding season, that enlarges quite a lot. Also, the beak is hardly orange at all. When we look at him, it's sort of palish pink, and there's a little black nail right on the tip of the beak. It looks like a fingernail, and it just extends over the top of the beak, and that's what they use for pulling up the vegetation at the bottom of the lake here.
Is it the case that the beaks become brighter orange with age and maturity?
Yes, and certainly when they get mature. And the male swan is called the cob, and the female's called the pen. And as you go into the season, the mating season, which starts quite early, they get their breeding plumage on quite shortly and carry that through the winter, and then they feed up, put on a lot of weight, and particularly the female. And the male then chooses a nest site. It probably wouldn't be here, it would be by one of the slow flowing rivers, either the River Yare, which is about a mile and a half away, or the River Tass, which is right on the eastern boundary of High Ash Farm.
These swallows are giving us a terrific demonstration.
They are. I'm talking about the swan and watching the swallows.
I think the swallow gives away quite a bit of weight to the swan.
Absolutely. That swan's a good 30, 35 pounds in weight. And so to take off, it needs the whole length of this lake, which is, 60, 70 metres long there. And it sort of starts off at this end and uses its feet, which are very large webbed feet, and it starts to kind of run across the top of the water.
You get that slapping sound.
Yes,
don't
and
you?
Then after that, then the wings come into action. It's a big wingspan. It's nearly up to 2 meters, so you're talking about 6 feet wingspan, large wings, and then you have that lovely sort of rhythmic sort of sound. It's almost a song as the swan takes off, usually into the air. If the wind is coming down the lake, it will fly into the wind, like aircraft taking off, just gives them that extra bit of lift. They can go onto the grass field beside us here and take off from there as well, but it's quite an effort for them to lift all that way. As I said, we're treated to the second heaviest flying bird in the world. And it's basically, I think it's our only resident swan species. We have Bewick swans and one or two others that come in, migrate in from northern climes that come, but the mute swan stays here really all the year. And this one's been quite friendly, but as I've been watching it, I've been learning about its day. It's here and it feeds all night as well, so it will sort of skim round, pulling vegetation from the bottom of the lake and eating it as well. Now it's preening. You can actually see it's just lifted one wing up slightly and it's just pulling out that feathery down, and it's lost most of its main flight feathers, which means just at the moment it's almost flightless. And that means it has to stay here. It's kind of imprisoned itself, but there's plenty of food.
So that's general at this time of year?
Yes, not just for swan species, but for most of the birds. The mallard, it sort of molts the ducks that come to High Ash Farm, and there's probably a dozen or so down at the end there, upending in the shallow end of the pond at the moment. And they molt quite drastically, to such an extent that they can't fly. All the main primary wing feathers, they're the long ones on the tips and ends of the wing that give them the lift. They come out and they're quite quickly replaced. So there's a 3 to 4 week period when mallard can't fly. And they're in this molt period. This is a mallard that's called an eclipse molt. So the male mallard look almost identical to the female mallard, although they still keep that bright blue patch on the wing called a speculum. Our swan is still preening himself, And so what I've started to learn is he feeds a lot on the vegetation, but doing the hours of night and doing the day, and I've caught him on the camera, and I hope to put it on this Sunday's podcast, he spends a lot of time reaching right down to the bottom of the lake as he swims along, as he's doing at the moment, right down to the bottom, pulls up some weeds and then eats them. And then when he's over the deeper water, there's obviously a lot of worms, various crustacean down in the bottom of the lake. There's freshwater shrimp here, which are quite high in protein. And he then, if he's over the deeper water, he not only puts his head into the water, which takes him down about 2 feet, he upends vertically down. It's quite an amazing sight for 20 or 30 seconds at a time. And that's just amazing. But what's happening is some of our swan species are suffering from a sort of curved neck syndrome, and it is quickly identified as lead poisoning. So how you have to scratch your head, can swans get lead? Well, the lead comes mainly from lead shot, occasionally weights from angler's fishing tackle that's been discarded or lost and caught on a branch perhaps, and they eat that and it gets caught in their gizzard, and the lead just dissolves in the gizzard just enough to cause some lead blood poisoning, and that causes this twisted neck syndrome. And it's so distressing to see. There's no lead in here because there's no shooting, but out on our broads, some of the broads have been dredged, and some of the mud that's come out from the broads have been pumped out onto various areas of land. That mud's been tested, and virtually none of it is free of lead shot. There's so much. I mean, a 12-ball cartridge with number 6 shot in will have 150 lead pellets in it.
Anglers stopped using lead for weights years ago, but in fact in shooting it's still lead shot.
Yes, it still can be. We're gradually moving away. It's a kind of voluntary choice at the moment, and my wish is quite quickly it should be converted to statutory that all lead shot is banned. It is superior because it's heavier and it travels further as well, and so it's slightly more deadly to use it in more one ways than one, obviously. But so it really needs to be withdrawn by statute now rather than voluntarily. And so that's the problem, that the lead is so persistent in the environment, it doesn't sort of decay or rot away, and it's easy to produce, it's also cheap as well, and it's very, very effective in what it does. But the aftermath of the legacy of actually centuries of shooting, either with shotguns or even worse, a punt gun, where you loaded the gun with not just lead shot but a few 6-inch nails and things like that, and you'd creep along the surface of the water as a wildfowler, and that sort of duck shooting season starts again very, very shortly, in early September. And that sounds like I'm anti-shooting. Absolutely not. It's almost the opposite, because many of our most valuable habitats, particularly in the county of Norfolk, which is an agricultural county, it also embraces woodland, which is managed for birds and particularly game birds, right away from woodcock, snipe in areas like this, which is still a game bird as well, this wet areas where they can probe in. And some woodcock come across quite shortly from the near continent. Once the weather's colder over there in northwestern Europe, woodcock come across and will join our resident woodcock, and they're also game birds. So you have this sort of relationship between agriculture, food production, and the sporting world as well. And it's just beginning to change. But when you see beautiful birds like our mute swans, it's just stunning to actually have them here at the farm. And
it's such a shame the lead affects them quite that much.
Yes,
it does. Well, it would affect us if we ate lead, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's a wonder I'm here, really, because all the pipes into the farmhouse from the well were lead pipes, and because of the high calcium content in the water here at Highash Farm. We've got chalk under the farm. I was brought up on water, not with just lots of calcium in it, but also with sort of lead deposits. And as a young fisherman as well, I used to carry the lead shot in my mouth, believe it or not. It was split and you could quickly bite some if you need to add some extra weight to your float. You'd close the little cut up in the shot and so it gripped the fishing line, and you could add a touch of weight to your float. And so this would have been ideal for me to fish in, because it's absolutely stuffed with fish, and particularly one called Rudd. And it's a beautiful fish, looks very similar to a roach, but you can identify it because it's got a red dorsal fin down at ventral along the base, basically. And roach don't have that, so it's beautiful. And there's literally thousands of them in there.
Swan was feeding on the bottom again.
Yes, there it is. It's feeding right down now, coming up and bringing up some vegetation. Yes, and it's joined the ducks because it thinks I'm talking too much. It's probably right, so it's decided to go down the other end of the lake. And moorhen are down there as well on the top corner, just going into the water there. Yes. Sort of young moorhen, which is lovely to see.
So they've come off on the edge of this lake?
Yes.
There's a nest?
Yes, they've come off the nest. They're doing a third brood now, so I'm expecting to see some little black fluffy balls walking around the edge of this lake any day now. And the youngsters that hatched from the previous two broods are going to learn to feed those little black ones as well, sort of learning parenting from a really early age. And it's lovely to see them here. There's just one family of moorhen. The male moorhen has seen the rest off, and this is his territory. The swan thinks it his territory, the mallard think it's their territory, and the kingfisher thinks, well, I'm a kingfisher, it all belongs to me as well. But of course nature belongs to everybody.
Well, it's a bit of a shrinking resource, isn't it, this lake at the moment, because of the driest period since the 70s. And looking by the outflow there, you've got an overflow, haven't you, for when there's periods of heavy rain. So it goes back into the stream, but it's high and dry. It must be 18 inches down this water.
It's about 2 feet beneath, which is a massive amount of water. There are several thousand, tens of thousands of cubic metres of rain needs to fall and come down the stream and top it all back up to where it should be. So fingers crossed we have some substantial rain quite shortly. In the meantime, that swan's growing his next crop of feathers, and we'll be taking off. You can see the lake down there is covered in feathers, and it's so interesting at night time to see all the moths that flying about over the water, going around to the edge, perhaps having a drink. Lots of bees in here in daylight as well, just coming down to the water's edge. And the camera was turned on by the moths or the mist coming off the lake in the early, early hours of the morning, and then streaking up and down, both nocturnal bats and lots of pipistrelles zigzagging across, feasting on the moths. Just such a lovely sort of mix of wildlife. Eat or be eaten.